Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, your tray table is in an upright and locked position, and that you are ready to get weird and think different. Please prepare for takeoff.
Today is Wednesday. It is October 20th, and we're back with another episode of Destination Different. I'm trying TikTok again. If you've been following the show for a while now, you might remember that a few months back, I hopped in. I said, you know what? I'm going to do a 30-day TikTok challenge, see where it leads me, see where it takes me. I think full well thinking that I was going to just blow up, you know, a couple viral videos later, hundreds of thousands of followers, the podcast would benefit, everything would start just rolling into place after a couple of big TikTok videos. Of course, that didn't happen. Not even close to happen. Had one video that had over 1,000 views. Everything else was like 100 views, 200 views. Nothing crazy. I do think there was some benefit to it in that I learned how to talk to camera. I got a little bit better at editing. I started to figure out some of the nuances of the platform. It is not an easy place. It is not like any other social platform that has ever existed, any other content creation platform that's ever existed. It is very, very, very hard. But so I'm back making that effort again to try and find some sort of success on the TikTok platform. My goal, if you remember the Destination Different goals for the whole year, one of the six core goals for Destination Different was 250 Instagram followers. I'm above that. And 1,000 TikTok followers. I am not even close to above that. So from now till the end of the year, I'm going to kind of just keep trying to churn these things out. Make TikToks, trying to figure out the platform. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, well, then I'll get better at video editing and talking to camera. So hopefully that somehow still benefits the podcast. But if you're not already, it is at Destination Different on TikTok. Go throw a follow over there because I'm going to be screwing around for the next couple of months trying to figure out how all these 18-year-olds are famous on TikTok. That's all. That's my preamble for today. I do think there is something valuable about always pushing yourself creatively, about looking for these new things that are not natural or feel different from what everybody has done in the past. Every single podcast to date that I know of has grown on the backs of word of mouth, off of a big Instagram following, off of being a celeb, of, you know, some form of celebrity, off of getting exceptional guests. That's how I've seen podcasts grow in the past. We now have this tool in TikTok that there's got to be some way for a podcast to grow on that platform that is throwing people into superstardom and into exposure, really, into more eyeballs than any other place on earth right now are on TikTok. So I'm trying it out. We'll see how it goes. But just wanted to give that little plug at the start. So if you're not already, don't laugh at me, but go check out what we're doing on Destination Different over on TikTok. And now for this week's guest, we have not one, but two guests on this week's show. And I am so excited to share this episode with everyone. We have a pair of sisters, Priscilla and Kim Addison, who are the co-founders of 57 Chocolate. And yes, you will leave this episode feeling hungry, needing to satisfy your craving, your sweet tooth craving. Awesome, awesome, awesome conversation with the two of them. So the two sisters have grew up, went through college, no experience in creating a product from scratch in chocolate making. And their story is particularly interesting. So Priscilla and Kim have grown up all over the world. They lived in Senegal. They've been in Switzerland. And they have Ghanaian roots. Their dad is from Ghana. They have this this calling to come back and, you know, make something special, seize opportunity that was happening in their home country of Ghana. And the two women were on a trip in Switzerland and said, you know, this place, it's known for its chocolate. Switzerland is known for its chocolate. They have all these amazing chocolate experiences, but they don't grow cocoa beans. They don't grow cocoa trees in Switzerland. For a long time, the world's biggest provider, if you will, of cocoa trees, cocoa beans, was Ghana. They're now number two in the world, but still a massive, massive global provider of cocoa. And so they said, well, if Switzerland, who grows no cocoa, can be a chocolate kingdom, why can Ghana not do the same? So they went back home with their dad and have now started 57 Chocolate. And of course, I love a brand that has a little bit of a story. Their name, 57 Chocolate, the 57 stands for 1957, which was the year of Ghana's independence. And I just think that is such a unique part of this brand's story and what they're trying to do. Every single element from the packaging to the chocolate itself is thought out. It is carefully calculated and all focused on building opportunity, on growing awareness to the country of Ghana and to the cocoa production of Ghana. And the story of Kim and Priscilla and them starting 57 Chocolate is just so, so inspiring and amazing. They are now, I want to say, coming up on 6 years in business and have continued to just grow year over year over year and are hell-bent really on making Ghana a well-known chocolate destination. And their goals are huge. Their aspirations are huge. I won't get into it all now because they explain it much better than I do. But I'm so impressed with their vision and their drive for where they want to take 57 Chocolate going forward. You might be looking at, you know, the next Willy Wonkas of the chocolate world. And we talked a little bit about that in this week's show. So I will shut up and turn it over to this week's episode of Destination Different with Kim and Priscilla, the co-founders of 57 Chocolate. I hope you enjoy.
Chocolate does come from a fruit, so there's some accuracy in that. And oftentimes it's interesting because a lot of people don't think about where chocolate comes from. It's so fun to eat that you don't really consider it. It's always sort of just been there and been part of our childhood. But there's this amazing backstory of how it's connected to a tree that has traveled all over the world, you know, starting in South America and eventually made its way to West Africa and became one of the major cash crops of the first country in Africa to gain its independence, which is Ghana. And the cocoa tree is amazing. It's versatile. And back then, the Aztecs and the Mayans, they actually thought of, you know, cocoa, Theobroma cacao, which is actually the scientific name of the cocoa tree, as the food of the gods. So definitely an interesting story behind the chocolate tree.
This is maybe a dumb question. Are there other, obviously, you know, in your line of business, you're taking the cocoa beans out and, you know, turning those into chocolate, but are there other yields from the cocoa tree that you could actually eat or consume or turn into other products?
For sure. And that's actually what we're hoping to do with our chocolate business. You know, you can make cocoa powder from chocolate. You can make charcoal from chocolate, which we will be releasing very soon. And what's great about the charcoal is it comes from the cocoa husks of the bean, the cocoa shell, pretty much. And then you can make soap from the cocoa beans as well. So yeah, it's a very, very versatile fruit or product.
Okay. All right. So to go back a little bit, you know, you both did not grow up in the farming industry. You did not grow up, you know, studying cocoa trees. And how did you first sort of turn your minds to, we want to start our own chocolate business. We want to start our own, you know, cocoa bean to bar chocolate business.
So both Priscilla and I studied international relations and French. And so neither of us actually ever really thought about going into chocolate. It was definitely not in the plan. So it's quite funny to think about what we're doing now and to think about what we thought we would be doing. So our parents were actually in Switzerland. And we, after graduating, joined them, and we were both working in the development sector. I was working with women in education. Priscilla was working in food security. And I remember being quite restless at my desk, 9 to 5, and feeling like I needed to create. And our father, who is a Pan-Africanist, encouraged us to consider moving back when he retired, because he planned on coming back here to Ghana. And he told us we should consider starting a business because there were so many opportunities. And that sounded amazing. It sounded very cool to become an entrepreneur. We didn't know how difficult it would be. Needless to say, we made plans to move back. And it was about 2 weeks before we actually moved back to Ghana that the idea came. I got invited to a Swiss chocolate factory with friends. And in that factory, there was a display of where all the beans they source come from. So the two largest displays, of course, were Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. And that was kind of the aha moment, because we were living in, what is known as the chocolate nation of the world. Mm-hmm. We ate a lot of chocolate. We gifted a lot of chocolate, even to friends at BC and Dickinson, where Priscilla went. But we never really considered or paid attention to where it came from. And so to realize that Switzerland had built, a reputation on a resource that Ghana is known for was quite shocking, because when we would come home, to Ghana for a visit, people would ask us to bring Swiss chocolate, and it should be the reverse. If we were visiting Ghana, people should rather be asking us to bring Ghanaian chocolate, especially since at one point Ghana was the first largest producer of cocoa, but now it's the second largest producer. So that's really where the idea came from. And we decided to run with it because we wanted Ghana to be known not just for its cocoa, because a lot of people hear cocoa and they think Ghana, they think Cote d'Ivoire. But when you think chocolate, you'll think Swiss, you'll think France, you'll think Belgium, you'll think, America, but you never really think of a West African country. And so we really wanted to change that and to show that quality chocolate can be made where the cocoa grows.
That's amazing. And I always like to ask entrepreneurs this, your dad was moving back to Ghana. You were starting to think about this, you go on this tour, did you just instantaneously, it was like, yep, I'm quitting my job. We're going all in on chocolate. Or what was that process like, going from, all right, we've got this idea in our heads, to actually hitting the ground and selling your first chocolate bar or figuring out how to make it? What was that time frame like, and where was your decision process at to actually pull the trigger and be like, we're doing this?
So what's actually funny is when Kim came to me with the idea of starting a chocolate business, we actually thought we were going to go into a crepe business, which is French pancakes. And so we thought that French pancakes were going to be the main.
You guys always just have sweet tooths, crepes, chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. We love it. So we actually thought these French pancakes were going to be the star of the show, but it actually ended up being chocolate as we did more research and talked to people in the field. So in between then, the idea came to Kim in 2014. When she approached me, and we actually didn't start the business until 2016. So it really took us 2 years to, get this up and running. In between then, we were taking classes on learning how to make French crepes. We were taking classes on chocolate making courses. We were reading, we were talking to people in the field. But yeah, Kim, do you want to add anything else to that?
Yeah. So as in terms of quitting our jobs, that was planned. The conversation that happened between me and my dad, I remember it was when he told us to consider moving back to Ghana. I told him, when you officially retire, I will resign that same week and I'll quit my job, you know, and plan mm-hmm. to move back. And 3 to 5 months later, I came home from the gym and he was like, you know, guess what? And I was like, what? He was like, I retired today. Looks like we're moving back to Ghana. And I think he was trying to test me to see if, you know, I would hold true to my word. And that week I actually ended up resigning. And then we started planning our move back to Ghana. But what's needed to know, you know, for people out there who are thinking about becoming entrepreneurs, both Priscilla and I, we had saved substantially to be able to actually move back and to, you know, invest in learning about the thing that we actually wanted to start in Ghana.
Got it. Okay. So you made that move back. And was that 2 years, like once you had already moved back to Ghana, that was the sort of research and development phase before you actually like officially started the business? Or were you still doing some of that while living stateside?
No. So we were in Switzerland and then when our dad retired, I think he retired probably in around the autumn, the fall, and maybe like a month or two later, we were in Ghana. So that transition was quite quick. But then when Priscilla mentioned the 2 years, when we were in Ghana, it took 2 years to actually get started because we were taking classes. And like Priscilla said, sometimes we would fly back, you know, to Europe or the States to take classes and to learn. And then also we were equally learning the field here in Ghana. Mm-hmm.
And Kim, did I see that you did like an apprenticeship too?
Yes, I did. So there was this amazing couple who I'm still in good terms with. I completely love them. I remember emailing them, you know, saying I would love to be an apprentice and learn from them. And they had never met me before. And I guess they just loved the idea and loved the story of, you know, Ghanaians making chocolate in Ghana. And so they took me on and they taught me literally everything they know. And our first industrial machine actually came from them. So that's they awesome. Were very keen on passing on the knowledge. So they are incredible people.
Okay, that's cool. And as you guys started to develop this brand, you're starting to think about, you know, going into the chocolate business. How you touched a little bit on the name, but how did you think about like what you wanted this brand to stand for? And was it always going to be 57 Chocolate, or did you go through different iterations? You know, what was that process like of like figuring out what you wanted it to look like, what you wanted it to stand for, and building some of that story around the brand that you were wanting to create?
So I'm actually laughing a little bit because we came up with a whole bunch of names before we came up with 57 Chocolate. One thing we noted that there was not a luxury brand on the market, and we saw that that was missing and we wanted to fill that void. But then also, you know, we wanted something that was very uniquely African and, you know, just brought African art and culture to the forefront. And a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, Ghana was the first African country to gain independence. And so we also wanted to highlight that. And through our name, 57 Chocolate, which stands for 1957, is when Ghana gained its independence from the British. But, you know, it's more than that as well, because at that time, you know, Ghana was making and creating its own products. We had a dairy industry, which actually no longer exists today. We had a textile industry. We were making and creating our own products and, you know, we were economically thriving. And so we wanted to basically bring that awareness to our chocolate brand and to inspire the youth to add value to natural resources and to bring back manufacturing to Ghana.
Okay. You got to share what were some of the names that were left on the drawing board?
Kim, you want to?
Oh my gosh, we can't.
It's kind of embarrassing.
We buried them and they've stayed buried. No resurrections.
All right, fine. Maybe someday they'll come out. I do like the 57 name is obviously perfect. You know, you made the right choice, but I always like to hear what some of the flops were. And are either of you, you know, artistically inclined? Were you working on the packaging yourselves? Were you designing the logos? Like, how did you, you know, is really just the two of you starting this business? Did you bring in others to kind of help out with different elements?
think both Priscilla and I, we have artistic eyes. Mm-hmm. We just don't know how to, we can see how we want it, and then we can take people who have the artistic eyes and hands, because we may not have the artist hands, and we work with them to bring out our vision. So we love collaborating with people. And so we searched basically for artists in the field and in Ghana, and we met up with them, teamed up with them, told them our vision, told them our ideas, and we essentially partnered with them to bring into reality a lot of the packagings that you see on our brand. Priscilla, do you want to add anything?
Sure, definitely. And, you know, we grew up very internationally. So because our parents traveled so much, they were really lovers of art. So they would bring back like a lot of African art from various countries and hang it up on our wall. And I think that was some inspiration to Kim and I as well. So you'll see that on our packaging. We highlight a lot of important landmarks in African art and culture. One thing we noted during the pandemic was that because people couldn't travel to Ghana, through our chocolate, they were able to tour Ghana. So we highlight important landmarks, important African art and culture, important symbols. For example, people really love our Adinkra symbols, which have, you know, a very unique meaning, and there are over 100 symbols that come from Ghana.
And talk about that a little more, because the listeners of this, I think it's fascinating. But so actually on the chocolate bars themselves, you have these, and Adinkra, is that how you pronounce it?
That's but correct.
You have those symbols that are like kind of raised up within the chocolate. So how did you choose which ones, you know, go with which chocolate bar as you started to like roll that out?
Give me one. So every bar or chocolate flavor can feature all the Adinkra symbols. So we didn't necessarily want to pick and choose. We just wanted people to have an assortment of fun things to basically learn about. So there are about over 100 Adinkra symbols. We currently have 12, but we plan on featuring all of them. And we also, not only do we have the Adinkra symbols, but this year we released our Bogolan symbols. And Bogolan symbols are actually an origin of Mali. And you often see them on mud cloths, which are worn throughout Africa and actually have been seen on different patterns, even in the States now that, you know, people are beginning to be more interested in African art and textile as well.
That's cool. I mean, it's almost, if you have 100, you know, someday you've got 100 of these symbols, they're almost like little like trading cards. Even I imagine it's like a mystery getting to open it up and like see what sort of, you know, what symbol is in the different chocolates. I think that's super cool. Executionally, are you like stamping them into the chocolate? Are you etching them in? Like some of them are raised, some of them are more sort of, I guess, like flat or etched into the chocolate, if you will. Like, how are you actually taking the symbol and putting it onto the physical product?
So we actually create our own molds. We use unique chocolate molds to get the symbols on the bars that we have. So they're very, very unique, very special to us. And like we said, we just really want to highlight African art and culture. And that's how we believe we're doing that.
I love that. And there's a story that I've now read and heard about from you all is as you're in these early days of developing the product of kind of figuring out how to make chocolate out of cocoa beans, you were up at 3-4 in the morning at night because that was when the electricity seemingly was the most stable. Tell me a little bit about that and like those early days of R&D as you were trying to figure out, like really teach yourselves how to make chocolate and make good chocolate.
Yeah, that was definitely an interesting period of sleeplessness. There's what we call it, it's called Dumsor in Ghana, which basically means light on, light off. And so during that period where we were starting, the electricity in Ghana was very unstable. So sometimes you would have 24 hours of electricity on, then 24 hours of electricity off, or 12 hours and 12 hours off and on. So we just had to work with when the light was on, and this was before we actually had a generator. It was definitely painful, lots of tears, but it was definitely an experience that we can look back on and laugh now. And I remember even just sometimes the light would be on, but the current would fluctuate either high or low. So on our very first wedding order, before we actually had industrial machines, we had these tabletop machines. And I go in to the, you know, factory to check the machine. Or Priscilla, was it you? Did you go in and you checked the machine and then you came in and you told me it imploded?
Yeah. I think it was you.
Yeah. So I was having breakfast, you know, just planning out the wedding schedule because the wedding was ordering like 2,000 pieces of chocolate. And that was way above our capacity at the time. So she comes in and she's like, Kim, the machine imploded. And I sort of look at her like, what? And she's like, the machine imploded.
She didn't believe me.
I didn't believe her.
I'm prone to jokes, like, but not those kind of jokes.
So I was just like, what? And then I went in and I saw, you know, that it had indeed imploded. And we had to have our, you know, uncle who's in London, DHL Express us a new machine so that we could, you know, meet this wedding order. And I mean, in the long run, we did meet the wedding order, but it was definitely interesting. And I mean, also, we like to laugh about our very first Valentine's Day order because it was just the two of us. I remember we literally pulled an all-nighter fulfilling all these orders and there were no chocolates, but then you had all these last minute husbands and boyfriends, you know, calling us saying, we forgot today is Valentine's Day, you know, please, do you have any chocolate left? And we were like, no, we're done. Yeah, so it's definitely been an interesting ride, especially those early days.
Yeah.
So you've started building some backup in inventory for Valentine's Day, I assume.
For sure. Absolutely. We are always prepared now.
For all the forgetful boyfriends. Like as part of that, like how long were you operating basically out of your own house? Like how long was that process where you're really, the two of you are doing it, you don't have industrial machines. How long were you doing that before you scaled up and what allowed you the ability to go and do that?
I would say almost about a year we were working in what we call like a home environment. But now we've since expanded into what it is, a production center. I mean, we were using our mom's oven and essentially what was like the living room of the house to make our chocolate. But yeah, it's been definitely a wild ride. And to look at the production center now, it's insane. We're going on almost 6 years, which will be in January 2022.
Wow. And did you take on investment? Was that still kind of operating off of your savings when you started to open up that facility? How did you start to scale? Were you, you know, making profit in those early days that you're able to reinvest back into the business? Like how have you continued to be able to grow it?
So yeah, everything that we made was automatically reinvested back into the business. And we also applied for grants, which also helped us. So we won the Tony Elumelu Entrepreneurship Program grant, and that grant gave us $5,000, which seems small, but was huge to us back then, you know, and helped us to get another bigger machine as well. So that's basically been what we've been doing as we continue to scale, reinvesting back into the business.
Got it. And I understand you have now, it's not just the two of you anymore. So what has that been like starting a team and, you know, bringing people in to work with you on building this? How have you thought about that? Because I know that's a big part of your mission is like, you know, fostering this youth, giving employment opportunities to others in Ghana. So how have you two taken on that task of hiring and bringing people in?
Yeah, initially it was through word of mouth or, you know, people who came recommended. And we employ about 10 people now, both men and women. And Kim will tell you that, like, initially it was mostly women. And when we trained them, it would be the women who lasted longer or who would be on the job longer, because for men, the work was just too hard and strenuous, which we laugh about. But, you know, we've grown to about 10 now. And initially, when we first began, Kim and I, we didn't have any experience in chocolate. So we thought that, you know, if we don't have experience, we can train others to learn. And now we have an amazing team, and it would not be possible without them. We're so grateful to each and every one of them because they all have unique skills and contributions that they bring to the business. And that's why it's thriving right now, in addition to the customers who patronized us.
Mm-hmm. And do you, how do you divvy up those responsibilities? Like, what are those people that you've brought on helping with? Is it literally the production of the actual thing? Are they helping with marketing or supply chain? Like, what are the needs that you needed fulfilled with bringing in other people?
So they operate across different departments. So we have people in our production, we have people in our packaging and design and marketing. And then we have people in our, you know, general operations who deal with suppliers as well. So a lot of them, once again, have come out, you know, this actually, it's interesting because I would say 95% of the people we have employed, this has been their first job. So it's been a training process, and it's been getting to know them and to see where their strengths are and where they can add the most value to the company. And that's been really fun to see, and to see how all of them have grown over the couple of years they've been here.
And I ask about your employees, but I mean, the two first employees, the two founders, you two are sisters. So how has that been working together? As I know, I have two younger brothers and I love them to death, but I know if I started a business with them, we'd probably murder each other at some point. So how has it been with the two of you working together, and how do you two sort of divvy up what you do on a day to day?
We get this question a lot.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah. Where people kind of don't understand. They're like, I don't know if I could work with my family member. But I mean, it's definitely been a learning process. But one thing that we've come to realize is that we both wear different hats, and that, for example, we have our sister hats that we wear, you know, when it comes to family matters. And then we have our co-founder hats, our business hats, when it comes to business matters. So we're very good at not mixing the personal with business. So when it's business, we're focused on business. When it's family, you know, we're focused on family. And then also it's, we're alike, but we're also very different. And so we both have our different strengths and our different talents. And so I think it's a good balance where we're able to feed off each other and create a brand that has, you know, been growing and that has been appreciated even throughout the continent of Africa. So we're very excited about that. And we're happy that, you know, as sisters, we're able to work together so well.
Got it. And do you, like, are there certain things, Kim, that you really focus on, and Priscilla, that you really focus on? Or do you sort of take it day by day and, you know, whatever needs to be handled gets handled by one of the two of you?
I would say we more so take it day by day. I think we tend to lean into certain things a little bit more. Like, for example, I actually hate like public appearances or talking. I just don't feel comfortable doing it. So I'm like, Kim, you do it. But she'll tell me, she'll be like, hey, you know, you got to lean into the stuff that you don't like to do too. So she'll be like, this time, okay, you're doing the public appearance, I'm not doing it. So we work on each other's weaknesses and strengths, which I like. So I would say it's a combination of both.
Okay. And speaking of public appearances, like, you guys have, in the 6 years of running this, you Google 57 Chocolate and there are dozens upon dozens of, you know, press articles and podcast features. Has that been part of your strategy to grow the business, is to get it out there in the press and, like, you know, help tell that story? Or I guess, how have you thought about, you know, growing that press and building the brand from a word of mouth standpoint?
So it's interesting because a lot of people, you know, think that we've, you know, paid to have these articles done about us, but we've just been really blessed to have people, you know, want to feature us and reach out to us. I think what we actually focus on is, you know, creating a good product. That's actually been our key focus, creating a good product, building a good team, and making sure that we're, you know, building our customer relations. So we found that even at the very beginning, we still actually haven't really paid for any marketing. It's literally been word of mouth. It's been people spreading the word. It's been, you know, people seeing our chocolate at weddings. And then, you know, they're having a wedding next to, and then they decide, oh, you know, I want 57 chocolate at my wedding. And then it's also just been, you know, people gifting 57 chocolate as well. So it's been an amazing journey of, you know, people spreading the word. And also social media has been great for us. You know, we love taking photos of our chocolate. And so even our first international order has was taken off of Instagram. Someone saw our Dinker symbols, and that's how we ended up shipping our first order to the States. Hmm.
So actually, talk to me a little bit more about that, because it's a very interesting, to me, it's an interesting business model where you are based in Ghana. You know, these are Ghanaian local products. And it seems like, and you tell me otherwise, but you know, that maybe the bulk of what you're doing and operating is in Ghana, but then you have orders coming in from all over the world. So how have you thought about expanding this international, like as this has expanded internationally, whether you wanted to or not? Like how are you thinking about international expansion and how you handle what somebody wants in the United States versus what somebody wants in Japan versus what somebody wants in Ghana, and trying to give something that, you know, satisfies all those different places all over the world?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, our thing has always been start local, but think global. Our chocolate is for sure well-traveled. I mean, we've shipped chocolate to places that we never would have thought of, like the Maldives, Russia, Australia, and then various places in the United States, Japan, and Asia. So for us, you know, we really want to get the word out there around the world that, you know, Ghana should not only be known for its cocoa beans, but for its chocolate. And so we are working with distributors in the United States, and we're hoping to eventually launch our e-commerce site where people can just click and buy, and then it'll be easily shipped to our customers within the United States and Canada. Meanwhile, we'll be operating the e-commerce side for the rest of the world, including Asia, the UK, and other parts of the world. So yeah, that's one of our biggest things. We are definitely looking to expand and continue getting the world out there. And, you know, our product has definitely spoken for itself through word of mouth. So like Kim said, we've been extremely blessed in that aspect. And then also the power of social media has helped us so much.
And what is like the breakdown between products sold in Ghana and sold internationally? What does that split start to look like?
I would say maybe 60-40. So 60 being international and 40 being Ghana, if not 70-30. And the reality is Ghana is still learning how to, you know, eat chocolate, I guess. It never really had a chocolate culture. And that's because, you know, the beans had always been exported in its raw material. There was never really any manufacturing within the country. So we didn't really develop that habit of actually incorporating cocoa and chocolate into our diet. So now there's a shift in that, where people are gradually, you know, eating more chocolate locally, but it's still not enough. And so that's where, you know, education comes in as well. But yeah, we're happy so far that even locally there's been, you know, a great appreciation of our brand. And that, you know, one thing that has been interesting for us is that when we started 57 Chocolate, a lot of people even locally were skeptical about, you know, chocolate made in Ghana. There had always been this stigma that made in Ghana is of lesser quality. So when we gave people our chocolate, they were like, wow, you know, this is made in Ghana. And so we love the fact that, you know, we're transforming mindsets and we're transforming narratives of what it means to be an African brand, and that we can show that there can be high quality African brands.
Are you just like blowing people's minds when they try chocolate for the first time in Ghana, that they're like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing on earth?
For sure. We're doing it with adults and we're doing it with children, which is my favorite thing to do. So we actually host chocolate tastings. And so a lot of the kids, you know, they really don't think that, you know, this kind of chocolate could come out of our country. And like Kim said, we're changing these mindsets. But not only that, we're educating people about the way chocolate is made. You know, most people, when they think of chocolate that is mass produced. And we are actually a small scale business. So we make chocolate from bean to bar in small quantities and small batches. And for us, you know, quality is a huge factor. In our darkened milk chocolates, cocoa is always the first and main ingredient. We're not trying to give people a quick sugary fix. We really want people to taste Ghana's cocoa. So yeah, that's what we're doing.
What does a chocolate tasting experience look like? How have you started to set those up? Because that's really, it's unique. I can't say that I've ever heard of a chocolate tasting before.
So they're really fun, and we have like different types of chocolate tasting. So we have our classic tasting, we have our chocolate and tea tasting, which we pair our different chocolates with different types of teas. And we recently launched our chocolate and art tasting session. And this one has quickly become my favorite, just because people get to taste chocolate and then they associate the feelings that they get or the memories that they get when they taste the chocolate with their emotions. And, you know, emotions can easily be associated with color, and then they're able to paint an African art piece. And so that's been really fun for us. So do you want to add more?
Yeah. And we also, for folks out there who don't live in Ghana or aren't visiting, we also do virtual chocolate tastings where we'll send you a chocolate tasting box. And Kim and I will get online and walk you through the whole process of how we make chocolate from bean to bar. It's a super fun experience, and I really enjoy hosting them with Kim.
I might need to sign up for one of those. I do this from time to time in these different episodes, but this is my freebie idea that I'm just going to throw your way. I feel like you guys just need to record people trying chocolate for the first time, and that would be your whole like social media content, because I'm sure there's reactions. I can't even imagine what I looked like trying chocolate for the first time. I would bet you'd get some insane videos from that.
That is amazing. That's a great idea.
anyways, but so tell me, for, and again, this is another game I play from time to time on this show, but I describe it as, tell me like I'm five, explain it to me like I'm a 5 year old. What is sort of your process of going from truly the cocoa bean of harvesting off the tree to like the final product of the chocolate bar? What would simply, you know, to somebody listening to this, be an easy way to describe how that process comes to life?
Okay, so how we normally explain it to kids is that, you know, you have the farmer who is the most important person in the chocolate process. And when he grows and harvests the cocoa pod, he removes them from the tree, cuts them open, then takes out the white seeds. He then covers them with plantain leaves. And this process is called fermentation. And fermentation is a big word, but it simply means he's making sure that the bean dies. It's essentially killing the bean so that it doesn't germinate. From there, after that process, it takes about 3 to 5 days. Then he moves the beans onto a bamboo mat, dries them out in the sun. That process takes another 3 to 5 days. And that's when the chocolate makers step in. We purchase our beans. We continue to dry them out in the sun. When we're ready to make chocolate, we then roast them in an oven. And then after they're roasted, we have to winnow. And winnow essentially means peel the skin off of the bean. Once you peel the skin off of the bean, you get the nibs. And the nibs are essentially chocolate in its rawest form. They're kind of like a coffee bean. They're very earthy, very bitter. Some people like them. Some people like to put them in their yogurt. Some people like to bake with them. And then once we have the nibs, we put them in a machine that's called a mélangeur or a grinder. The grinder starts to grind it. And because the nib is actually 50% cocoa butter, once the machine warms up the bean a bit, it starts to melt. So then you get essentially liquid chocolate with no sugar or milk in it. So if you want a dark chocolate, you add sugar and some more cocoa butter to make it more fluid. And if you want milk chocolate, that means you're going to add some milk powder into it. And finally, once the chocolate is ready, which happens 3 to 5 days later, running 24 hours. So chocolate doesn't take like 30 minutes to make, which a lot of kids think actually. So 3 to 5 days later, when it's ready, we then mold the chocolate, and then it's ready to eat or package.
Oh, wow. Okay. So from start to finish, that's a couple of weeks from actually, you know, the cocoa pod coming off of the tree to a finished final chocolate bar.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. And I don't know if I read this correctly as well, that you guys currently work with a number of local farmers, but that you have interest in starting your own farm, or, you know, kind of taking in some of that production in-house a little bit more. Is that something that you guys are actively looking into, and how are you thinking about expanding in that way?
Yeah, so that's something we're definitely actively looking into. We actually purchased a cocoa farm. So we're actually hoping to go from tree to bar. So basically growing our own cocoa trees and, you know, going through the process, that long process that Kim just explained, ourselves. So yeah, that's definitely in the works. And we hope to launch that in the near future.
So going from bean to bar to tree to bar.
Exactly.
Okay. I like that. Is there any, obviously right now you're making chocolate bars, you know, full bars, you have the little sort of squares that I think are awesome. Are there any, you mentioned charcoal even at the start, like, are there other innovations in the chocolate space that you're looking to get into, whether that be, I don't even want to speculate to guess. Are there things that you're looking into, you know, beyond sort of the standard chocolate bars?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much that can be done with cocoa, from, you know, cocoa pulp fruit juice to, you know, cosmetics. So we essentially, there's the cocoa fruit is an amazing resource, and we essentially want to explore everything that it can be used for. So you'll definitely see more interesting products coming from us.
And what is the you mentioned charcoal at the start, one of you, I can't remember. What is that? What is that product like? I can't even envision what that is.
So it's literally like grilling charcoal, but it's eco-friendly. So one thing that we're big about, we love trees, and deforestation has been huge here in the charcoal industry, because most charcoal uses wood. So instead of using wood, this charcoal uses the skin of the beans, which is typically discarded. And so it's an amazing charcoal. Sometimes, you know, one of the processors who helps us to make the chocolate, he sometimes says he can smell the hints of like cocoa and chocolate, you know, scent in the charcoal when he's like grilling, you know, stuff on his grill with it. So we're very excited about that, and to be offering something quite unique with something that's a byproduct of cocoa.
That's amazing. Okay. So literally I was like, what is charcoal a type of chocolate? No, it is literally charcoal. Like you would, that's amazing. I would never have thought of that as an innovation of where you could take this thing. I want to hear a little bit more about you've now been at this for what, 6 years almost. What is the next year? What is the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years look like as you continue to grow the 57 brand?
Sure thing. Yeah. We always tell people that, you know, essentially we want to create a Willy Wonka chocolate factory type situation in Accra, Ghana, where people can come and, you know, try chocolates, watch how it's being made. And, you know, a part of that chocolate factory will have like a school where people can come learn, and they'll learn about how to make chocolate themselves. So we're very big on like trying to enrich people's knowledge about chocolate and just about chocolate making in general. And then we're also hoping that eventually, you know, West Africa will be known for its chocolate. And you know how most cocoa awards and festivals are held abroad. We're actually hoping that, you know, most of them will be held in Ghana, and, you know, chocolate makers on the continent will be recognized, but not only that, will be well known for the products that they're making.
Okay. I like that. The Willy Wonka chocolate factory in Ghana would be a spectacular sight. How has the reception been in Ghana to what you all are doing? I imagine it's very supportive, but are people starting to wrap their heads around the possibility of, you know, going from just these cocoa trees that have been, you know, on the land forever to now really creating these amazing end products. What has the like sort of reception been like for you two?
Definitely. It's been super positive. I mean, when we first got started, a lot of people were like, what you're trying to do is impossible, you know, go back to the States and get an office job. But when we actually came out with the product, people, you know, were quite amazed and encouraging. And, you know, they told us to keep up the good work. So I think it's definitely been receptive. And honestly, it's we can tell it's been receptive, and we can tell that 57 has, you know, paved way for other makers. So since 2016, we've seen a lot of other companies also in the bean to bar industry pop up here in Ghana. And that's a good thing. You know, some people might say, oh, you got competitors, but competition is a good thing because it often gives the opportunity to collaborate. But also, you know, if you think of, you know, the London Chocolate Show or the Salon du Chocolat in Paris, those are, you know, chocolate shows in Europe. And you would think that because West Africa makes more than half of the world's cocoa, that such shows should actually take place in West Africa, but they don't. So when we see more people pop up, that begins to create an environment where pretty soon you may see, you know, the West African Chocolate Show or the Ghana Chocolate Show, and where you would have people from all over the world come and experience, you know, made in Africa chocolate. And that's what we hope to see one day.
I love that. That's amazing. And on the flip side, obviously that, you know, maybe the reception in Ghana has been positive. You mentioned that your family was a huge driver of getting this business started, of you moving back to Ghana. How have your parents and your, you know, the rest of your extended family been in supporting you on growing this business? Have they gotten involved at all? Are they helping in the kitchen? Are they building products? Are they, you know, sort of just like watchful cheerleaders? How has that been?
Yeah, no, our family is definitely involved. I mean, whether or not that's like, you know, giving us advice or, you know, purchasing our product and taking it back to their friends and colleagues. And they've just been spreading just through word of mouth, you know, information about our chocolate. And it's just been extremely well received. And we're so, so incredibly thankful to all the help that we've received from them.
Was this just really a ploy by your dad to get you back closer to home?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think both Kim and I, we've always wanted to go back home. I think he was trying to test us just to see whether or not we'd start this idea.
Fair. Okay. All right. That's a good dad right there. all right. I'll wrap up with just a couple of rapid fire questions that I have for both of you. So first, we'll start, Priscilla, you go first, but what is your favorite product that you currently make as a consumer?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm a baker, and so I love to bake, and I would probably say it is our chocolate chips, which we actually recently developed because of the whole pandemic. People were bored at home, and a lot of people took to baking, like myself. And so a lot of people were really receptive of this product. And I would say right now, the chocolate chips are my favorite. They're really, really delicious. You can eat them on your own, or you can just put them in any sort of baked good. Like I love to make blondies and, you know, brownies and chocolate chip cookies. So they're absolutely delicious. They won't disappoint. You got to give them a try.
Okay. I like that. And Kim, what's your favorite?
Well, my favorite depends on my mood. So I would say in the evening times, I'm more of a dark chocolate person. So our 73% dark chocolate with sea salt. And then in the early mornings, I can eat chocolate at any time. I would go for our milk chocolate with the almonds and sea salt. The common denominator, salt, because I love the sweet and salty of them both.
This, I imagine you get this question all the time, but are you just constantly like fighting the urge to eat what you're making? I imagine you get that question a lot, but I would be 500 pounds if I worked a chocolate business.
I'm not, but Priscilla is.
I was about to say, Kim has definitely more self-control than I do.
All right. If you were to have a 57 chocolate billboard in Times Square, you get a free ad placement there. what would you put on it? What would it say that goes on the Times Square billboard?
Ooh,
that's a good one. I think for me, if I think I would put our tagline, our logo, of course.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
And then our tagline is, it's called Raising the Chocolate Bar.
I like that. Okay. All right. If you could have any celebrity, alive or dead, be the spokesperson or endorse 57 Chocolate, who are you taking there?
Oh, there's so many.
Wow.
Okay, the first two that came to my mind, I would say Kwame Nkrumah, first president of Ghana, and then Denzel Washington.
All right, I like that. Priscilla, any additions? Priscilla, any additions, or we're going with Denzel?
We'll go with Denzel.
All right, Denzel, if you're listening, 57 Chocolate, it's great. And then my last question. So I end every single show with the sign off of Stay Weird. So I'll ask you both, what makes you weird?
Whoa.
I tend to take to dancing. So if I'm feeling nervous, like before I have to like do something public, I will literally just like break out and dance. I'll play a song so loudly and I'll just break out and dance and just like try and shake off my nerves. But then also I realize sometimes I'll take that outside just before I have to like get on the stage and I won't realize that I'm dancing to the music in my head. So I would say that's probably a little bit weird, right?
Were you dancing before this podcast?
Oh, actually, no, I didn't.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. Okay.
That's probably because we were off camera. If we were on camera.
A whole different story.
Yes, for sure.
And Kim, what about you?
Oh, that's a good one. Oh my gosh. I can't think of anything right now.
Kim, I've got one for you.
Okay. You know what? Go ahead. Priscilla can answer.
What people don't know about Kim is she's really good at impersonating people.
Oh my God.
Whether it's like I think she was an actor in another life. So a lot of like the Disney movies we've seen or just like teenage movies that we've seen when we were kids, like she's good at reciting the lines or just like talking to me with that voice. So I would say that's kind of weird, but fun.
If the chocolate business goes down, maybe Kim has a new career.
There you go.
That is a wrap on this week's episode of Destination Different. Big thank you to Priscilla and Kim for calling in on this week's show. We're operating across multiple time zones, and I'm just super thankful to have had the chance to talk to both Priscilla and Kim. So kind, so bubbly, so nice, and so, so, so impressive with what they're building with 57 Chocolate. You know, it just is, you hear the story of them cooking chocolate in the middle of the night, no electricity, trying to figure out the best ways to grow this thing, and they've now started to employ local Ghanaians in what they're doing. They've started to expand their operations and where they're shipping to. It's just really, really impressive what they've been able to build and their vision for where they want to take 57 Chocolate. So I will make sure that we get all of their info linked up in the description of the show. It is, I believe, at 57 Chocolate on pretty much every social platform. You can also buy their chocolate online and have it shipped directly to you. They're available in some retailers in the United States, so you can get it there as well. But we'll make sure we get all that info linked up in the description of the show. That's all we've got for this week. That is a wrap. We're going to keep it rolling, keep it going next week with another great, 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 great episode. And as a friendly reminder, if you heard at the top, if you're not already following at Destination Different over on TikTok, you should be. It's going to happen. This thing is going to blow up. This podcast is going to blow up one way or another. I'm going to keep experimenting until it does. And TikTok is the next place that I'm trying to do that. We will see you again next Wednesday with another episode of Destination Different. Until then, stay weird.
Superpowers. We fell in love for just a couple hours. I can't tell the difference between what's fake and what's been missing. Often I'm misunderstood, so I'm looking for a better me. This is your love song, baby. I hope that you know the words. This is your love song, baby.